a lot of these big directors are making big movies that cost big money with big names, and they're not bringing in big box office numbers. And so these people are going to move to Amazon or Netflix because they're willing to pay for them.
Hi, and welcome to the episode of Cine Nation. I am Brandon Sparks.
And I'm Ben Gertz.
And you're in Portland, right?
I'm in Portland, and you're in Los Angeles, right, Brandon?
I am. Here's the thing. A lot of people don't realize that we actually do this show like from different like areas of the country. Like,
Sometimes.
Sometimes we're in Alabama eating cheesecake.
Together, which was one of our most successful episodes, Brandon. Let's just brag a little bit. How weird is that? Who is listening to us? That's what I just don't understand. People should tweet at us and say, why are you listening? Tell me why you're listening.
Cause, we want to know.
Yeah. I mean, like, you can say positive or negative, but I'm just surprised. That was a very fun, laid back, Brandon's eating cheesecake, we're hanging out, and then people listen to it a lot, which is surprising. So we're going to do it again, but this time we're not together eating cheesecake.
Like, it's people kind of don't realize that, like, we're sometimes occasionally scheduling six people in, like, three different time zones.
Two different countries.
Like, yeah.
Well, this Canada. Is an international, it's an international affair.
Cineworld is what we should rename the place. All right.
That'll be our spinoff. That's great. I like that, Brandon. Okay. This is on the fly.
I like that. So, Ben, what have you been watching or reading or anything? You're kind of busy because you have a family.
Well, yeah, but that let's not always use excuse. I went to go see the Batman movie, Lego Batman movie, with my son in theaters. That was, you know, it was great. I love the writing. I thought it was actually, quickly, because it's a cartoon and because they can kind of go over the top in their writing, right? There's no subtlety. Mm-hmm. Like, all the jokes are about being on the nose. You know, the fact that it opens on black, he's like, black, all important movies start on black. You know, like, they just call it out from the beginning. It's the most Batman movie that's ever been made because they get to cut
that's
down.
That's what people tell me.
Yeah, they actually get down to, like, the core of who he is. It's really fascinating, actually. Like, even though they're all, like, little, you know, plastic characters, it's a beautiful little film. I mean, yeah, I really liked it. And then I watched Bad Moms with my wife, and that was hilarious. And then, how do you say this Kaufman movie? Animalasia? Do you know what I'm talking about from 2015?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
People are going to laugh now.
Yeah.
People are going to laugh. I don't know how to say the name of the movie.
Anomalisa.
Thank you. Sorry. I watched it.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed that. And I watched The Night Manager. I've been watching a fair amount. I watched The Night Manager on Amazon. Watched it in one day, Brandon.
Wow. What did you think of it?
I loved it. I was on, I was on the plane, trapped, watching it on my phone. I kind of wish I'd been able to watch it on a bigger screen because it really was incredibly cinematic. And it made me think about True Detective Season 1 because of the single writer, single director for every episode, right? It felt very much just like a six-hour movie in the consistency of it, the tonal consistency and the structure, because it was just interrupted by an episode ending. Like, there was, you know, other than that, it was just a really, really long movie. And I loved the performances. It has all of my favorite British actors. Olivia Colman and Tom Hollander. Tom Hollander, oh my gosh. For those who don't know him, he's in a great British show called Rev, R-E-V, where he's a priest in downtown London. He is the funniest freaking guy with what he pulls off in his hesitations and his stutters. Anyway, all right. What have you been watching, Brandon?
I've been watching a few episodes of The History of Comedy on CNN, which I'm really liking. It's just like each episode focuses on a specific thing of comedy. Mm-hmm. I've also been watching This Is Us, which I preach a lot on the show. The recent episode like had me in tears. Just gonna be honest.
You can be honest here, Brandon.
They had a lot to do with Memphis and like the music in Memphis, which I love very dearly, and so that was why it kind of hit home with me, and just the characters are great. I watched the Oscar shorts yesterday. I watched the animated shorts, the Oscars, which I thought were really good. I haven't been in the theater that much, like big mainstream theaters, like in about a month and a half. So this weekend I might just like go see a bunch of movies. I'm not sure.
Yeah, what's going on? What's wrong, Brandon? You're usually
I don't know.
The most watched of all of us.
I know. Well, I'm still watching stuff. I'm watching a lot from home and like trying to catch up on Oscar stuff that I haven't seen. So like I saw Arrival recently for the first time.
Lovely.
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I understand why it got so many nominations. I love the cinematography of it. Bradford Young, dude, who is phenomenal.
That shot where they go up, where when they do the gravity change and they have the music swell and the sound, and they do, and that camera move up, that alone is amazing. Like, I loved that. And they came back to it and called to it over and over. It was great.
Mm-hmm. And that helicopter shot, the first time you see the spaceship.
Yeah.
Like the clouds are coming in, because the clouds are not, that's not CG, that's actual.
Oh wow, I didn't
clouds
know that.
Coming in,
the that, spaceship was real too, Brandon.
Spaceship was real.
No, that was practical.
CG, I think they were on the helicopter, and Bradford was like, we gotta shoot this now, and they shot it, and they just like they circled around.
Wow.
Where that area is, and so I think it's one of the best shots in that movie.
Yeah.
And Bradford just is known for like shooting in like dark spaces, and he likes lighting with practical stuff, because I heard him do a Q&A a few years ago for Ain't the Body Saints, because he was a DP for that.
Yeah,
which I know you liked that movie, right? I thought
we saw it, we must have seen it at the same time at Sidewalk. Yeah, they were
they did it at UCLA. I saw it at UCLA like a year or two ago.
Pardon.
Oh, I'm sorry. So it was, you saw it at Sidewalk.
I was in Birmingham, Alabama. You were at UCLA. The Cannes Film Festival.
No, it was just in the UCLA Jeff Bridges theater.
Got a name drop. My goodness.
Mark was the one that took me, or that invited me to it, because they were doing, because Bradford was doing a thing with UCLA, and their film they were going to show was Ain't the Body Saints. Mm-hmm. And Mark, I think, saw it with you.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful film. Like, the cinematography is really, really lovely.
And he's great, but he's done Most Violent Year. The next thing he's doing is the Han Solo spinoff movie.
Oh wow!
He's shooting that. Yeah, so he went from like Selma to Pawn Sacrifice, which was the Bobby Fischer chess movie.
Yeah,
I think he did another one that came out at Sundance this year, and then he just did Arrival, and then he's doing Han Solo with Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who did the Lego movie. And
I'm extremely excited about that.
A great cast, and like I think has a great crew behind it. And I've been a fan of Bradford's for a long time, because he just... I people think I'm crazy when I say this, but Bradford has the ability to be like one of the top cinematographers in the industry. I think he could easily get to the same level as Roger Deakins or someone.
Yeah.
That's how...
Well, I mean, somebody has to take the crown. You gotta watch the throne.
Yeah, exactly. And like, and the thing is, like, it made sense, because like basically, he did Arrival, which Denis, the director who did Prisoners, which Deakins shot. So Denis used Deakins for Prisoners, Bradford for Arrival, and then I'm sorry, Deakins for Prisoners and Sicario, Bradford for Arrival, and then Deakins again for Blade Runner. So like,
but let's be clear though, like Sicario, like that's got some amazing cinema. Like Deakins is still on top.
Oh, yeah,
the shots out of the bottom of the wheel well of the plane as they take off, like come on.
Yeah.
He's still the best, but you know, I'm with you. He could,
but Bradford's going to get some shots too. Like that's the thing, is that Bradford, when you look at his limited filmography, like think of it like this. Bradford's at the moment right now where Deakins was when he first started with Coen Brothers.
Sure.
Like, that's the career part he's at. So
no,
like,
I'm, you're calling it early. It's like my call for Brie.
The day the Room trailer dropped.
Look, just because I had insider knowledge doesn't mean I couldn't make that trade, you know? Like.
So anyway, let's get to the topic for tonight, because we can go on.
Come on, let's just talk about all the things we watched, Brennan. Just... People, we got so many subscribers now. People are going to listen to us talk about anything. Now let's talk about the topic. Let's hit the topic. This is a good one.
Yeah.
This is going to surprise people what we're coming back to. Dun, dun, dun.
We're going to talk about... We're talking about streaming and like Netflix.
This is the only reason I come back on the show now is just to talk about Netflix. Oh, man.
You're our streaming podcaster. You're our streaming expert.
Yeah, I'm like the business analyst.
So, yeah, exactly. So you're doing the numbers. I'm not looking at them. I'm just looking at the other stuff.
Yeah, you go to movies. I look at spreadsheets.
Like, yeah, it was like you were sending me numbers like, this is their revenue. This is their profit. I'm like, cool.
Yeah,
I understand it, but you just like really love it, which is fine. And I'm like, okay, cool, I get it. They're doing well.
Well, so let's start. I think we've got a lot of different like small bits and pieces, but
we do.
I think we should start with the strategy question that you asked at the beginning, which is, what would you do? Do you want to set up maybe the premise of it, and we can kind of break it down?
Of the what would you do if you were in the studio stuff?
Yeah, basically, all of these content makers have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So essentially, I mean, Netflix, say when they first started, 2002, or when they were kind of starting to gain steam as like the directed or the DVD mail service they did. And then when the streaming came in, studios started like giving Netflix content to use, and it allowed, and not just
for
Netflix,
money,
but streaming
like they
services
pay,
in
they,
general. Yeah. For money.
Yeah.
They paid. It was a licensing fee. It was a licensing fee. They licensed their stuff out to Netflix, just like certain production companies or studios will license it out to, channels overseas, in different markets. It's what you do. And so studios did that with Netflix. And in turn, it allowed Netflix to gain a much larger audience. You could actually binge watch full seasons, which you couldn't really do because Amazon wasn't around yet. Hulu had it, but Hulu just, I don't, it, that was more for live or like for day after TV. So Netflix just became this big thing of getting content from other sources. And then slowly Netflix was starting to basically use the money they made from showing other studios content and started making their own, as we all know, House of Cards, Orange is the New Black, and now they're getting into film. And so right now, the question or the thing is that studios essentially unknowingly built this beast that is on par with them to some extent. With name recognition, they're on par. With the amount of content they're producing, they're on par, if not more so. And I think they have more guaranteed viewers. Like they know what, because they have the data that they have. They know kind of what plays well with their audience. When studios sometimes now, I feel like they're like just rolling the dice and seeing what works.
Well,
so
I mean, you can
basically as a
Go ahead.
But basically, as a studio, it's like, the question is, what do you do now that Netflix and these other streaming services like Hulu and Amazon have become such major players in the industry?
Right. And
does that set it up well enough?
Yeah, I mean, it's there. The one simple way to I want to set this up with a little bit of numbers, just because we talked about how much I like numbers.
Yeah.
Today's number is, how many of those companies that we're talking about have your credit card on file, right? Like Viacom. Like there's a chart we'll put in the show notes. It talks about all the big studios: Walt Disney, Time Warner, 21st Century Fox, NBC Universal, Sony, and Viacom. And two of them, Viacom lost money. And not just a little bit, but lost $364 million on the year, partially because of wonderful decisions like Monster Trucks, which was $115 million write-down.
Did they count that? They count that for last year or this year? They filed that last year, I know, but it was released this year.
Yeah. I think they wrote it down on their books last year before the film came out. They knew it was going to bomb that bad, which is just amazing. I love that's a real thing. But so basically, you're talking about predictability of Netflix knowing the numbers. There's another level of predictability, which is they have your credit card if you're a subscriber, and you just pay. Like, you're paying all the time whether you watch anything or not. And I think, yeah, I mean, so we're going to play a little game, which is what would you do if you were, you know, if you were at Viacom, right? Because they've fired the head of, you know, the studio.
Yeah, Brad Gray.
What, you know, what would you do in the context of the environment that you're in, which is Amazon, Hulu, Netflix, all these other studios? Like, you've historically competed with the other studios and done okay, or, you know, good some years, bad some years. You've won some Oscars, whatever. But now you're in, you're competing with those companies plus all the streaming companies. So what do you do? What's a person to do, Brandon?
Oh, gosh. I'm still trying to figure this out.
Well, so let's take it. Let's start with a softball, right? Which is,
yeah,
Walt Disney had $9.2 billion in revenue over the year, and $2.5 billion in profit, right? So they did the best. They were the best studio out of the mix, right? But we were looking through. I was looking through the numbers and sending them to folks. Netflix had $8.8 billion in revenue. They had much lower profit. They're running at a much thinner margin, like Amazon is, where their profit was only $186 million. But, I mean, basically what we're talking about is, like, Netflix isn't taking that difference. Like, what are they doing with that money that's, you know, not profit? They're spending it. They're spending it on content. Yeah. They're spending $6 billion on content, right? So they're spending more than you could bundle up some of these studios together, right? I mean, basically, you know, they're bigger than Viacom, at least, and they're pretty much bigger than, you know, NBC Universal, just as far as content spend, content buy. They're not as big as Disney, maybe. They're real close. And the you know, remember, there's the people saying, well, Disney should buy Netflix. But Netflix at this point is not just a little company.
No.
They're worth 60, like, their market cap is $61 billion, which means if you wanted to just show up with cash to the stock exchange and say, give me Netflix, and people are willing to buy it. But it's more complicated than this. But roughly, you would need $60 billion in dump trucks piled up to get them. Walt Disney is valued at $173 billion. So Netflix is a third the size, now, you know, valued size of Walt Disney, right? They're huge. Yeah. They're huge. They're bigger than Viacom. They're bigger than all these other companies. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's not like buying Lucasfilm or Marvel, where you just put down $4 billion and hopefully when you release three or four movies, you make your money back.
Right.
That's not the case here. And I think one thing that studios are trying to do, because I forgot to send this article to you, but they're starting to push the window for release in theaters to be released in home. So they're trying to make it smaller.
Yeah.
So they're trying to make it a $50 rental is what they're trying to do.
Yeah. $50
rental.
I saw that.
For home video. I don't think it's a smart decision. I think that they're just like, wait, like, so it's still not day and date. It's just closer to when it was released in theaters. I don't think people will pay $50 to watch that. Like,
well, you can imagine like groups of friends getting together, or people with money on their hands who are, you know, because you're basically opening up a new tier of people with money who don't really care, who are like, sure, $50 for some. Like, if you could watch Rogue One on your big screen TV, like a couple weeks out, sure, somebody might spend $50, order some pizzas, have friends over.
I guess it's kind of like how like pay per view was for like boxing or like UFC fighting or like wrestling. It's that's what it would become. And I don't know if that would happen. Like, maybe like you do have people who like will have like stream Netflix with they're not just watching it by themselves, they're watching it with people. But I don't know if charging $50 per rental works, because also too, I mean, I know this is, if you, I mean, the DVD window from when films come out on DVD is actually getting smaller and smaller. Like, I think if it's in theaters, if it does okay in theaters, it's probably out on DVD in like 3 or 4 months,
right?
Which means it's at Redbox, people who rent Redbox, or If you live in Los Angeles, you can rent it at Cinephile.
Give him the address, Brandon. Give him the address. You're like Kellyanne Conway on Fox, but anyway, go ahead.
Corner of Sawtelle and Santa Monica. Yeah.
My only political joke of the evening.
So, but and then depending on the licensing deal, it's like a month or so when Netflix is on. Unless you're like with Disney, I mean, Zootopia was on Netflix very quickly.
Well,
I think, and a lot of the Disney stuff.
So that's the thing that underpins a lot of this, right? Is let's talk about companies who have done deals with the devil, right? Disney,
essentially,
Disney did a deal with the devil. Netflix, what was it, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, in 2013, I think. It was a huge deal at the time for Netflix. It was considered extremely risky. It was a huge buy for them because they licensed almost the entire Disney catalog starting now-ish until 2020. So it's like a 3 or 4 year window of a rolling window of different items from Disney's catalog, but it includes things like Star Wars is going to be on there. Like, you're talking about basically everything is going to at some point cycle through Netflix. Disney did the deal. Like, that's going to happen. And the reason people were saying that Disney should buy Netflix is in some ways because they're hamstrung by, it's an exclusive deal. If they started their own streaming service, they couldn't even have some of their own stuff, right? I mean, as crazy as that sounds, that's the reality of it until 2020. So there's a bunch of, you know, I was reading things where investors are saying, oh, they're fine. In 2020, they'll launch their own thing. They'll have learned all the lessons that Netflix has to offer. I don't know what that means, but, you know, basically they'll be fine. They can launch it at $10, $15 a month and they'll be fine. They'll have all their stuff, which is true, sure. But in the meantime, Disney is, again, the most successful studio with their franchises, with the Marvels and Star Wars and all these huge tentpole movies, right? But let's talk a little bit. We are recording before the Oscars, so we're going to potentially say things that are going to be really silly after the Oscars. But
or really smart, or one of the two.
Or genius. I'm planning to say genius things. I don't know about you, Brandon. But let's talk about, so Netflix, all the streaming services are in a unique position that I think this is something I haven't said on the podcast before, so I'm not just repeating myself. But because they have a subscription to your credit card, right? Your credit card is giving them money every month. They can afford to buy and bring in prestige films, right? Amazon has Manchester by the Sea. If that wins, you know, either best screenplay or maybe best picture, who knows? Or best actor, right? You go down the list. If they win one of those things, they're gonna promote the hell out of that, right? They'll probably run TV spots all over promoting it because it's a big deal. And they'll be the first streaming service to win. And it'll be interesting to see how valuable that is and how potentially upset that is for Netflix, right? Because think about all of the press that's going to go out. If they do win one of the big ones, especially Best Picture, but if they win Best Picture, there is going to be a line of articles and TV segments and all this free publicity to talk about the first streaming service to win an Oscar. And the second winner won't get that. Netflix won't, if they win next year with Best Picture, they'll get some, but it won't be the same. And so what's that worth, right, in promotion costs? Because supposedly Netflix has spent about $1 billion in promotion and marketing this past year. So they're spending a lot on content, but they're also spending a lot of money to just get the word out about what they have. And Amazon, I don't watch a lot of TV, but I have seen tons of promos for Man in the High Castle and all these things, right? So
Sneaky Pete,
yeah,
I mean,
Sneaky
all
Pete.
These different TV shows and Manchester.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so to complete the thought just a little bit on the prestige movie, just to focus in on prestige pictures, I think there's something, just think about, maybe you're a little bit different than me, Brandon, but it's like, there are certain movies that it's like, I know I need to see Manchester by the Sea, right? Or let's put another one on the table, like La La Land. I haven't been to the theater to see La La Land. We talked about it 2 nights ago. We were like, well, you know, we could go see La La Land, or we could just go get coffee and like chill out, you know? Right. That's what it's like to be a parent. You're just like, I just don't want anybody like grabbing my, you know, grabbing me and like, you know, anyway, you just want to chill out. But so that means that the companies that have that movie made $0 from us, right? But with these prestige pictures going to streaming from the beginning, like this new one that just hit Netflix, I Don't Feel at Home in the World Anymore, you know, Sundance Grand Jury Prize winner, they're going to get, you get the buzz from it, right? Which is like, hey, have you seen this Sundance movie? It's really funny. It's got Elijah Wood. It's got this great cast. So you get people to sign up, or you get people to not cancel, because you have this thing in your head of like, well, I have the option to watch it someday. It's on Netflix. I don't want to lose the option to watch that. But you don't actually ever have to watch it for them to make money from it, which is different than going to the theater to see Silence, right? Which most people didn't do because it's 3 hours long. And like, you could put Silence on Netflix and still get value from it. Netflix could still get value from it. And you would have, as a consumer, like perceived value of the option to watch it. But you don't actually ever have to watch it. It's like a it's a mind-bending.
Well,
You know,
and that gives them the ability to actually determine how much they'll make each month. Is that, hey, if we keep our subscriptions at this amount, we'll make X amount of dollars. Right. So they know what their revenue stream they know what their revenue is going to be every month, unless there's for some reason some like catastrophic internet failure and everyone has to cancel their Netflix. I mean, even then they couldn't do it because they wouldn't have internet.
That's an interesting worst case scenario. But I mean, here's an example though. I've had Netflix for like over a decade, and I had movies in my list. You know, when the time when it was DVDs, I had a list of DVDs so long that it stopped working. Basically, I had like 500 DVDs on my queue because I'm just.
You're like, it's full. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was full. And so I had to call support and they were like, yeah, it's not really meant to work with that many DVDs. You should just delete some. And it was like, I started thinking about it. It's like,
watch some.
Yeah, I was watching some, but I was watching like a couple a month, right? And I started doing the math and I was like, I'll never watch some of these until I die. Like, I'm watching so few, you know. Anyway, it's obvious.
Yeah.
But there was that thing in my head saying like, well, I don't want to get rid of my subscription, even though I'm only watching like one or two movies a month through DVD, because I'm going to eventually get to watch this prestigious movie that I keep moving down my list and never getting, because I just really want to watch like Mission Impossible or some, you know, right? I think there's something interesting about prestige movies that I think are going to move more and more towards streaming services like The Irishman from Scorsese, right? Where it doesn't make sense for Paramount to even put up something like Fences, which is basically just a one room set, you know, like it's just a house. Like,
it wasn't a one room set.
You know, it is a very low budget majority film when of it you really was, think yes, about yes. it. But even that is a challenge to make any money on. But when you're to make any money on when you have to get people into a theater. Right. And I think that's the key, is to get someone off their couch to go into the theater to see it is a different thing than just billing people every month for the option to watch it. And to be clear, I saw Fences in theater. I'm a hero. It was a great movie.
I saw it in theaters, too.
I'm happy for you, Brandon.
But going back to this prestige picture thing and being able to do it on Netflix, and I've talked about this before, but there's certain places in the country and let's keep it in the U.S., that don't get those type of movies.
Sure, yeah.
But have an audience that want to see those type of movies. So like Silence, for example, the biggest amount of theaters it was in at one time was 1,580. Okay? That was for one weekend, or for 1 week.
Yeah.
To put that in comparison, let's just say, Captain America... Let's just say Star Wars.
Yes, I was going to say, go to Star Wars. You're going to get to like 5,000 screens or something, right? 6,000 screens?
Yeah, you're going to get to a huge amount for multiple weeks. That's the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's see, weekly, I mean, I bet Star Wars is like, okay, let's see. So Star Wars Force Awakens was actually only in 4,134 its first weekend, but it stayed in 4,134 theaters for four straight weeks.
Oh, that's interesting. Because out here, I mean, there was like, you know, screenings on like five. They took up half the theater basically when it came out.
Yeah.
Huh.
And so it opened December 18th and then it closed in June. But so December 18th to March 10th, it was in 1,000 or more theaters.
Yeah.
So for over 3 months. So you have a good chance of seeing that movie. With Silence, it was in a theater. It was in over 1,000 theaters for 1 week. And so basically it's like they look at the numbers and go, we're not doing well this week. It's costing us money. Let's take it out of half the theaters.
Well, and the theaters play a role in this too, right? The theaters are like, look, nobody's sitting in my seat.
We're not making money.
Yeah, pull that crap out of here.
And it went from literally 1580, 747 theaters, and then the next week after the 747 was 51.
Yeah. Well, it bombed. I mean, more or less it bombed, you know, even though it got...
I'm sorry. The week after it was... I'm sorry. Actually, it was worse. It went 747. I read this wrong. 747 to 1,580, then to 316.
Yeah, yeah.
So it dropped 1,200 theaters in 1 week.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, even though it got amazing reviews, people had a lot of really positive things to say about it. It didn't move people into seats, whether, you know, and I saw promos for it, right? I saw trailers that, you know, it was promoted. It wasn't for a lack of promotion. It's people have a lot of things going on in their lives, and the three-hour movie in the theater is a tough sell. It really is, like, it could, you know, it can be that simple. And, it, you know, so let's go back just a second to the $50 at home thing, right? You know, in my mind, that plays out as like, well, you know, hey, let's have a bunch of friends over. Let's do pizza. Let's make it this splurge sort of thing, right? Which in some ways is the theater as well, right? Like, things are good. Let's go get a Coke and popcorn. And, you know, when I went to the Batman, Lego Batman movie with my son, you know, that was with the Coke and the popcorn and the tickets. We had a discount, blah, 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 blah. It's still like $30, you know? It's like... It's not free. It's not nothing. And I really wonder how some of these things will shift when the economy gets not as great, right? Because if people aren't going to see Silence now and people aren't going into the theaters to see some things now, imagine what happens when the economy gets worse and people don't have $40, $50, $60, $100 to take their whole family to see Lego Batman movie, right? It becomes a little bit more rare thing. I think because it feels like a one-off kind of splurge, especially like those $50 rentals at home. If things are good, you're like, sure, $50, no big deal. Put it on the credit card. Don't think about it. But if things get less good, right? The stock market isn't hitting all-time highs. You know, the unemployment numbers go up, whatever. You could imagine a world where nobody's doing $50 rentals, right? I'm not trying to say doom and gloom, but what I am saying is I think it's more likely people would say, well, I'll keep Netflix or something like it. Maybe they keep Amazon Prime only, right? Because they're like, well, I got to watch something. I'm sitting at home. I got to have something to watch. But it's so much easier to go $10. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Amazon Prime is a really easy one because in your mind, it's free, right? It's freer than Netflix is. So I wonder how some of that shakes out, right? Because basically I'm saying like we're in pretty much the best conditions that the theater, like theaters and studios could ask for, and things still aren't very good for them, right? If you look at this chart that we'll include, right? It's not that great. Like they're not making just buckets of money. Disney is making money, but you know, I think Disney they've put themselves in a unique position with their theme parks, and like they're even in bad times, I think they'll do okay. But who cares about, you know? Well, anyway, go on.
Disney's building brands.
Yeah, that's what exactly. Disney does. Exactly.
I mean, that was years before they had Star Wars, before they had Marvel. They only had like their animation brands and their animated films They have characters in the theme parks. They would have TV shows on their net, on their like Disney Channel shows. That's what they did. And they were looking at, because I remember reading this, they were looking at brands that that could do a bigger audience, specifically a male audience, because they didn't want kind of what Disney's big thing, especially in the 80s, was they couldn't get people in to see the, or couldn't get older kids in to see movies, because who wanted to see a Disney animated film? So they created like different studios like Touchstone and Hollywood Pictures and then Miramax to show like we're making more than just this, and Disney's kind of taken away.
Mm-hmm.
So what they want to do was they want to get the male, the younger male audience. So they tried like buying Power Rangers. People forget that Disney owned Power Rangers for a short amount of time. They used to do on their like their like kids channels, and they never really did anything with movies like they're about to do. That's being released in a few weeks.
Which isn't that basically so just a Transformers movie, but with people that make up the Transformers?
So yeah, I guess, yes.
It is cool in the trailer that they have Kanye. But anyway.
That's not matters. So Power Rangers didn't work. They sold that back to Sabin, where I'm from. We say Sabin. Or how you pronounce the name. Sabin Films.
Well, if you're talking about Nick Saban, I know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah. I know how to pronounce that name, but I think it's Sabin. Sabin Films. I apologize if that's incorrect.
I love this, Brandon.
So that goes back to them. So Disney buys Marvel first. They have a brand that's targeting their demographic they're wanting to. It was rumored at one point they were going to buy Hasbro and get Transformers and all that stuff.
Wow.
They were looking for a second brand they were looking for to buy. No one thought it'd be Star Wars. Mm. That wasn't something that was on anyone's mind. But it made complete sense because they can put it in their theme park, because they can make video games out of it, they can put TV shows. That's what they're looking at doing, is building brands. They're looking at making $1 billion movies. That's why you're seeing them remaking their animated films and the live action films. I can talk a lot on Disney if you can't tell. They're remaking their anime films and live action films. Again, that's creating brands for those characters to be put back in the theme parks and whatever. And be tied into their TV shows like Once Upon a Time or whatever.
Right. No,
and that's what other studios are trying to emulate. Like that's yeah. what with why just and one of the in the Hollywood Reporter article we have, when it talks about Brad Grey leaving Paramount, they're talking about how all the studio heads that don't have the shelf life for studio heads nowadays is getting shorter and shorter. And they don't have as many tries to fail. And everyone's kind of trying to emulate Bob Iger, who's the CEO of Disney, because he's building brands. And so if you look at the studios, if you look at Paramount, they have Mission Impossible and Transformers. That's their two big things. So everyone's trying to make their cinematic universes for each of those franchises. And then Universal has Fast and the Furious. I'm forgetting people. Fox has X-Men. Like, everyone's trying to develop their own brands,
yeah.
But they're trying to emulate Disney, and no one can because they have theme parks, they have the merchandise.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the whole hook of it, right? Is you have not only decades of history, right? Because they're not just making live action movies of any old film. They're making them of like childhood favorites, right? Of things that people can like sing along to the songs, who have the like, you know, comforters on their beds when they were five. Like, that's the stuff that, like, you can't just step in as the head of Sony and be like, hey, let's implant childhood nostalgia into a whole generation of people. It's not going to happen. So that, you know, you're getting to bank off something else. But also, yeah, that's the interesting bit about Disney, right, is because they built up brands, but they also have this, like, many, many different types of revenue streams where they have TV, they have theme parks, they have all of these pieces where, and that's kind of the question a little bit for Netflix, is they are ruthless about, well, ruthless might be too harsh, but they are maniacally focused on their strategy. You know, in particular, we've talked about, should they budge on this day and date? They basically have a hard, you know, it was supposedly the reason that Birth of a Nation went, is they would not budge on day and date release. On the service worldwide, right? Global rollout with basically no theater willing to partner with you other than a few art house theaters. You know, they do a press release saying that Beast of No Nation and these other films play in like 20 art house theaters around the country. But if you're, you know, if you're trying to win an Oscar, for example, you need more than that. You know, like the Academy is still playing by the old rules, which involves prestige, which involves, you know, kind of playing by the social norms of the industry, which is people going out and buying popcorn and keeping everybody's pockets lined, and Netflix saying, hey, we want it all. And they probably will end up with all of it, you know, in a way. Like, they're doing really, really well and show no signs of slowing down, really. But because they're not willing to budge on that, they will be second or third on this streaming service race for prestige awards, I think.
Yeah. Because I think it's different when you compare it to TV.
Yeah.
Because TV is somewhat like Netflix. You can watch that. You watch that from your home.
Right.
But especially in the industry with film, it's about, like, what can I go see at my Arclight or my AMC or whatever. I mean, Beast of No Nation, when I'm looking at, it played in 31 theaters.
Right.
That was the most it played in nationwide.
Yeah, and I've told the story, but I saw it at an empty art house in Denver. Like, it was a beautiful thing, but it was literally the three of us in the theater alone.
and so Netflix has, Amazon, the thing is, some people don't realize that Manchester by the Sea is an Amazon movie, because it's playing in theaters. It's being promoted on television.
Right.
It's getting all this buzz because they had that window of like a few weeks of it in theaters before it comes out. They did the same thing with Woody Allen's Cafe Society. And they've done better. I mean, Manchester has made, I think, $65 million in the U.S.
Right.
It's a streaming service. Or it's $46 million in the U.S., $60 worldwide.
But, I mean, think, you know, really, like, I guess that's the thing I don't understand about Netflix. They're staunch, like, holding to this strategy so firmly is, okay, so you enrich theaters a little bit by letting it play out, and you delay its delivery to Netflix, right? You give it a 90-day window or a 120-day window or whatever, the standard window, right?
Yeah.
You still make the money on ticket sales, box office. And then when it does come to your service, it's still a big deal. I understand it, though. I mean, in a way, you know, anytime someone's getting off their sofa to go to the theater is a time they're not sitting on their sofa at home watching Netflix. You know, I mean, like, if you're measuring the world based on attention, which some people have kind of shifted to just kind of using that as the limited resource, it's not money spent on content. It's really just people's time to watch stuff. Then it kind of makes sense. But I kind of go with Amazon on this, where you get to play by the old rules. You're still eating everybody's lunch by owning the rights to it. And you're going to know that it's an Amazon thing if it wins, and when it's finally on the service, they're going to, I mean, we've said it, they're going to promote the hell out of it.
Yeah, I mean, by this, if, because this is hypothetical because we're doing this beforehand, if they win an Oscar this Sunday, or as you're listening to this, yesterday or this past Sunday, what's going to happen is today, Monday, there will be TV spots saying Oscar-winning movie, Manchester by the Sea.
Right.
It's going to happen. They've already probably had it edited. They have it, like, ready to go to where on Monday or this week those can go on TV and say Oscar-winning film, Amazon Studios, Manchester by the Sea.
But, you know,
it's going to happen.
Yeah, and think about this, too, though. Even if they don't win, they were nominated, right? They're going to promote that at a minimum on the service and everywhere else. They're going to say Oscar-nominated movie. And you're not going to see that on Netflix, even though they have a lot of really great things on there. They're not in that running. And I do think that that's, when you're spending hundreds of millions of dollars promoting your service, especially globally, I think the Oscars, I don't know this, but I'm going to just say that the Oscars carry some international prestige of some sort. Like, that's valuable to say this movie is on your service. And it won an Oscar. I don't know.
Right now, I'm on Box Office Mojo. And the top banner on the right, and the right side banner, is a for your consideration ad for Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah.
It says 6 Academy Award nominations, Best Picture, lists all the main ones. And then it says, like, breathtaking, RogerEbert.com, which is not Roger Ebert. It's a different author. It's a different critic. But then underneath Manchester, it goes by Amazon Studios.
Yeah.
And so that's something that Netflix can't do, except with like 13th or something along those lines, a documentary. They can't do that.
I think it's clear that like we're saying all this, and there is some hit and miss to all this, right? There is some, as much as all the companies are data driven and maybe too much so. It's clear that like next year, with the amount of spend that Netflix is doing, they want to be in this game, right? I mean, they've picked up, there's the articles about the new Scorsese movie. If it doesn't get sidelined by lawsuits, will end up on Netflix. They're making all these plays. It's just they bet on the wrong horses to get to the Oscars. And it's so interesting with like Manchester by the Sea, because, you know, it's a... For most of these, you assume, or there's like trade talk of the bidding wars, or the bidding that's going on, because there are so many buyers for these things right now, for top tier prestige films. It's so interesting to think that you could be Ted Sorrentos or one of the Netflix executives and saying, gosh, we could have spent, I mean, because think about it. They were bidding, say, I don't know, what did Manchester sell for? But, you know, if you had bid...
Like 10...
Yeah,
we're 10.5 million.
We're talking about chump change, people. In the context of $6 billion, it is chump change. It is so weird to think that they wouldn't just ride in on a horse and say, "You want 10 million? Fine, we'll give you 20." Like I think that's where they might be. I understand like they're a publicly traded company. They can't just waste money, right? Like they, it matters to them how they spend it. But I think the value of one of these is underestimated in whatever model they have, right? They have a model of like, what is all this stuff worth? How many subscribers will it add? And I don't know, because a streaming service hasn't won one of these, and they haven't won one, they don't know, right? They don't have a model looking into the future of what happens when you win an Oscar, how many people join your service,
exactly.
Right? They only know and maybe they're estimating it, I don't know, but they only have their historic information to look at, which is when we buy this movie with these actors and these people, this many people join, this many people watch it, right? But they don't know the value of one of these, and I think that they're underestimating it. I've said it 5-6 times now on the podcast, but I think they're probably kicking themselves with like not spending double or triple what it's worth, right? Which is like, you still have the box office money, you still have the box office. This is not a total throwaway. You're not losing, especially on a small movie like that. It's not Silence. It's a $10 million picture. Like, spend the money. I don't know. I'm going to call up Ted Sorrentos and give him an earful.
Yeah, we'll go off that too. Because this goes into, especially when you're looking at, like, say, Sundance stuff with them buying, I don't want to live in this world anymore, or I don't feel at home in this world anymore. And then you have Amazon getting Manchester by the Sea. We have an article that we're looking at from Forbes. We're talking about how both Amazon and Netflix are after like star power. So when you look at Amazon, they have Manchester by the Sea, and they have Cafe Society. They're trying to be more. They're actually trying to be more filmmaker driven. That's what's kind of gotten them over Netflix, and Netflix is now starting to be more filmmaker driven. So they have like Martin Scorsese's The Irishman. They have Brad Pitt's movie War Machine. They have Duncan Jones project, and they have David Ayer and Will Smith doing a $90 million sci-fi movie. And
so they're not afraid to spend money. Like, that's the thing that's...
They're not afraid to spend money. Yeah. And they're spending money on, say, I don't feel at home in this world anymore, which, because this goes into something I talked about before the show, was Netflix really isn't an independent, like, company. They're not just a streaming service. They're essentially a studio.
Yeah.
They're essentially buying these projects, like Irishman, like Bright, and which is the Will Smith movie, and like I don't feel at home in this world anymore. That film was bought before it was shown at Sundance. Netflix essentially produced that and gave the money, like, hey, you go do this. And they didn't have to go through all the hoops that you have to go through at a studio. They were just like, here's the money, okay, that's the budget, great. And they just went and made it. And then it gets released at Sundance. Before ever premiering, it's already a Netflix film. And then now, less than a month after the festival, it's on Netflix. And then
which is cool, but let's talk about this, though. I mean, like, you told me about this movie And I just logged on and saw that it's there and it launched. But like, I didn't know. I haven't heard about it. I keep up with things moderately well, right? But I haven't heard about this. I haven't seen a trailer. Haven't seen it promoted. And beyond that, I think that there is a, like, because the movie business is actually not a good investment, right? Like, there's a bunch of great articles just about don't put your money into movies, right? If you're an investor, like, you're in this because of the allure of the silver screen, of the lights, of the red carpets, right? And that's the thing that I think is missing to all this is, like, so they launched this on Netflix globally. That's great. You know, people can watch it in the comfort of their home. But think about the actors and the filmmakers and the investors and all these people who actually are kind of the, like, social capital, social clique that puts all this stuff together. There's kind of something lost if they don't get to tell all their friends, hey, come down to the Arclight. It's playing. Right? I mean, I'm sure they probably still had a premiere. It was at Sundance. They got to do the festival circuit. But you don't get to take your grandparents or your mom or your friends or, like, tell it, your neighbors don't walk up to you and say, I just went down and saw it on the 80-foot screen that I think of as a movie. You know, it's different when people say, yeah, I watched it on my phone on the bus. It's great. You know, that's just that just takes the charm out of it in a way that I think is important.
No, I agree. And that's kind of going off, because we none of us have seen it, but going off of Silence, was that a lot of people in this town that didn't like the movie saw it, like, at home on their TV.
Right.
And the people who usually loved the movie were the ones that saw it in theaters. But so I don't feel at home in this world anymore. Like, that was, it was produced at Netflix. And so I actually got to see it on a big screen. And, like, when I was watching, I'm like, I wonder how many people got to see this or will get to see this on the big screen. Because it's a fairly, like, it's an independent film, and, like, loosely independent film, just budget wise. But, I mean, it's still a big film. And, like, I wonder who gets to see it. And they did, and it won the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
You had movies like Fruitvale Station, Whiplash.
Yeah.
All these films.
Oscar
win
contenders.
Sex, Lies, and Videotape was kind of the big one. Like, you have all these, in the 89, you have all these Oscar contender, like, important films.
Right.
Winning that prize at Sundance. And then that's a Netflix thing. And guess what? That wasn't really talked about, I feel.
Yeah.
I didn't really know much about that film, and I kind of follow the trades. I didn't follow Sundance as much as I usually do, but, like, this year. But I didn't really know about that movie until I saw it. It was a great film. I thought it was a great film. But it's interesting seeing what Netflix is doing with buying the films they're doing, because I think they're going off star power. Another film I saw recently was Imperial Dreams with John Boyega. It was made in, like, 2013. It premiered at Sundance in 2014. It just recently was put on Netflix as a Netflix original.
Wow.
And so what that did was that Boyega wasn't big when he made that movie.
Yeah.
And then Star Wars came out, and they're like, oh, we could do something with this. Like, it's a recognizable face. And it's like a 90-minute movie. It was made for a couple million dollars, if that. Because they shot, like, in Southern California. I think I'm trying to find the budget for it. But, like, you thought, like, oh, it just sat for, like, a couple of years after premiering at Sundance, and it came out 3 years later on
Netflix. I wonder if they had, you know, maybe they had trouble selling it, and then...
No, yeah.
And then Netflix came along and bought it, I would assume, before Star Wars. You'd be a crazy person to have a John Boyega film that hasn't sold with Star Wars on the map.
It might have felt like, oh, we can't release this. Cause it's kind of it's not like Fruitvale Station.
Yeah.
Cause Fruitvale Station is a really big, it's a big film and a very, like, intense film. This is kind of more of a drama, but it won the Audience Award at Sundance for the next category. Basically, that's like showcasing up and coming filmmakers.
Yeah.
And it's like a little bit below, in my opinion, the Grand Jury stuff. Still prestigious and still great.
Sure.
And, like, you see a lot of great talent out of there. But it was the top that year. And it wasn't picked up anywhere. It just sat for 3 years and then gets released. So, I mean, it was probably, they probably bought, Netflix probably bought it right after Star Wars came out. That's what they probably did.
Or they bought it earlier and sat on it I don't know. That seems weird.
But they do it a year after Star Wars.
Yeah.
And now you have, like, Boyega hadn't, I don't think he even signed on for Star Wars yet when this movie premiered. He was just known for Attack the Block, which was like a British film that he did right before that. So, like, this was just mainly going off of his stat, like, what, how he was seen in Star Wars, or like his recognizable face in Star Wars.
Right.
So, to go off of this, because it's the big news, is The Irishman.
Yeah.
That's a big step because they're, like I was saying before, they're starting to get filmmakers like Amazon is doing. But they're like putting $100 million, now reportedly at least $125 million into the production budget for this movie. How do you feel that buy affects the studios, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, so what we've seen clearly, right, is Amazon and Netflix slowly eating bigger and bigger things, right? Bigger and bigger movies, bigger and bigger TV shows, where at first House of Cards, okay, sure, they're just licensing it, no big deal. And then, oh, dang, they're actually producing their own shows. That's interesting, and owning them forever. You know, and $125 million, that's a lot of money. But again, you know, $6 billion, and I'm sure it will be even more. You know, their growth numbers are really good. Their stock is going kind of crazy, you know, with all the different news that they have. And so, yeah, I mean, they're not going to spend less next year, right? They're going to spend more. And getting big movies like this, yeah, I mean, it makes sense for them. I do wonder, though, if, you know, people are going to feel the same way about De Niro and Scorsese when they don't initially see it on the theater. Like, I'm coming back to it over and over, but it's like, okay, so it's a $120 million movie. That's a lot of money, but it's still going to play on your phone or on your 32-inch HD TV. Like, it's going to be cool, and it's going to be free to your membership, but I just don't, like, is it going to be worth it for them? Probably. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's a big spend.
It's a big spend, and I think, I mean, we'll probably see a little bit before, because I think Will Smith's film and Brad Pitt's film will come out before The Irishman does, but The Irishman does start production, I think, this year now. If the lawsuits that they're having with STX Entertainment, which they initially bought the world, global or the overseas rights, distribution rights for The Irishman, and they paid like, I think, $50 million at Cannes to like for the film, and now all of a sudden it's on Netflix, and they're wondering, is this, will, like, what will happen with that? Because STX is a company backed by is a Chinese company that's focusing on making like American films, but are like genre based films, and that have some sort of stars to it. So do you see, with the Scorsese thing happening, do you see other filmmakers? Because in the Forbes article, it's saying it's only a matter of time now before Netflix or Amazon picks up the next Steven Spielberg, like, prestige drama, or the Tim Burton fantasy, or possibly even that major, like, IP-based franchise. And it quotes, like, the James Bond distribution negotiations are still going on.
Right. And, you know, sure, I think totally. Because here's the thing. We're talking about it like Netflix got the big win here, right? But in a way, I don't know if Scorsese had too many takers who were like, yeah, bring your $100 million movie over to us. We would love that, considering you lost buckets of money. You know, I mean, sure, we all think of him as a prestigious director for obviously good reason. He's made incredible movies, but he's not doing it for the money. Same with, you know, Spielberg. A lot of these big directors are making big movies that cost big money with big names, and they're not bringing in big box office numbers. And so these people are going to move to Amazon or Netflix because they're willing to pay for them. Content is still valuable and being probably overvalued. Or, well, I mean, you know, people are willing to pay for it, so I don't know. But it's higher than I think most people would expect. They're spending more than they would expect or want. But I don't know that the studios are going to be super sad about that. But the problem is that next piece with the James Bond or whatever, we don't know what that next franchise thing is going to be. But with Netflix and supposedly Amazon spending in the neighborhood of like $2.5 billion-ish on content and potentially eating like $600 million in like losses is what some people have estimated, because it's a loss leader for them. They're selling toilet paper and dog food, and they're basically burning money to get people into the store to buy stuff on Amazon, right? But as they have more and more money that they bring to the table, sure, like if you're spending $6 billion, you could be in negotiations to pick up the next Lucasfilm if you wanted to. I don't know why they would necessarily. That would be a absurd percentage of their budget. But there's not really, you know, I don't know that there is another Lucasfilm out there, but there might be a new franchise thing that they would be in the bidding war for, and they pick up and they have the big names, and it's a big, they make 10 movies off, you know, it becomes the next Fast and Furious or whatever. I don't know what that thing is, but yeah, I think at that point, what do these studios do? If they don't have, because they basically have walked away from like the mid-budget comedy, more or less. There's just not many of them. I mean, Ghostbusters did not do well. Like, you go down the list, they don't really happen.
And that really wasn't mid. That really wasn't even mid-budget. Like, that was fairly high.
Yeah, but I mean, but you think of the $30 to $50 million comedy. Like, they happen, but there's not a bunch of them, and they're kind of walking away from these prestige pictures because there's not any money in it, and they have to make money or they get fired, and so they're betting on these big tentpole movies, and some of those don't do well and they get fired, but some of those do well enough to keep them alive and keep funding all these other small bets. Like Sony was the example in the one article where they do Sausage Party and some of these smaller films that make money, but it doesn't matter because they lose it on some other big bet, right? I don't know. I think we were gonna, you know, go through, like, if you were at Paramount, what do you do? I don't know. Like, I think you keep making movies. No, but I think you're not gonna be able to get out of. I think it's too late. You've already given up too much power to Netflix and Amazon, and it's not just one company. It's not just Netflix. It's all of them. They all are bidding for this stuff, and now they're bigger than you, and you have to sell it to them, because what else are you gonna do? You don't have a streaming service, and it's not gonna be enough to keep you going just to go off box office. That's not gonna be enough to keep your company going.
I think studios would have to bring back, in order to like succeed and do better than what they're doing, is to bring back the whole mid-budget movie. And it does exist. It's just not happening that much. I think Universal, a few years ago, when they had the year they had Jurassic World and Fast and the Furious 7 and Minions, or Despicable Me, I think, or Despicable Me 2 or Minions, one of the two.
Yeah.
They're interchangeable.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
But they had
movies like
Straight Outta Compton. Yeah.
Pitch Perfect 2. Yeah. They had movies that were like in the 20 to $60 million range, which is kind of the mid-budget thing. They had some. For example, Jim and the Holograms cost like $5 million to make. It was a box office bomb, like making like a little over $1 million. But they spent $5 million for production.
Yeah.
Maybe $30 for publicity and advertising.
Right.
But when they have something like Jurassic World or whatever, when they had $3 billion movies, it worked. But yeah, I think they need to, and so something like STX Entertainment, which is the Chinese company that is suing Netflix, or might sue Netflix, I don't think it's official yet or not, they're making mid-budget movies, mid-budget genre movies for America and worldwide audiences. So that's a possibility for the companies. So it's going to change some things, I think. And Scorsese being that last like big film guy who wants to shoot on film, who wants to be on a big screen, him going to Netflix feels very shocking to a lot of people. And so the question is, will we see more people do it?
Well, I'm going to make a big claim here, Brandon, which is, if you're looking at the numbers, it's not shocking, right? If these movie studios weren't owned by mega corporations, if Sony and Time Warner and Viacom weren't these conglomerate companies that had so many other sources of revenue, these studios in many cases would be just outright unprofitable and not viable companies, right? I mean, like they are today, maybe.
But it's like, where's Paramount in 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, it's deteriorated rapidly, and we may not see them outright collapse because they're part of these just conglomerates, right? They can kind of absorb some of the heat by rolling off the losses onto other divisions. But you do have to imagine that the movie, like the slates of all these, the future releases, has gotten smaller. For Paramount, for example, what is it, like 10 films or 11 films this year? Like they've cut it in half, basically, for their slate. And so you can imagine that at some point, they just become smaller and smaller players in the market. And it's not like all of a sudden that just like, well, they rebound because of one great film. They might add a couple more films. You know, at some point, you just become a minor player and you're in the game, but you're not playing in the same league.
Or the way you stay afloat is you sell your major properties like Mission Impossible to someone like Netflix.
Yeah. No, totally. Think about if they sold it and there was a Mission Impossible TV series, for example, like a mini series or something like that.
Which is what Mission Impossible was before.
Exactly. Which I think I would watch that. Sure. I mean, if Netflix picked that up and paid some stupid number, like $1 billion or $2 billion, think about it. For these studios, sure, that's like their long-term like death nail. Like they don't have like a moneymaker. But if you just had an immediate... Okay, so you're a CEO that's not going to last long anyway. You have stock in the company. You sell something for like $1 billion or $2 billion, right? Which would be a lot of money.
Yeah.
Your stock would go bananas. Your personal holdings in the company go way up. And you look like a genius. But in the long term, you know, in the immediate quarter, you're a god. You're just this genius CEO. In 5 years, you're gone. You're an idiot because you can't make those movies that would have kept you afloat. So that a lot of these people are not thinking long term. I mean, Bob Iger, sure, he's been around for decades. But if you're going to get fired in 6 months because your four-year-old told you to make a movie called Monster Trucks and you believed him, like, you got to play the short game and start liquidating some stuff so that your stock's worth some stuff. Brandon.
Yeah.
Tell me.
It's been fun. So what?
Yes, it's been great.
My recommendations?
Yeah.
I'm going to say, since we're keeping the Netflix theme, I would go say go watch I Don't Feel at Home in This Place Anymore. Or I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore. It's funny. It's violent, or it's gruesome in spots because there's some violence going on in it. But if you say like Blue Ruin or like I haven't seen Green Room, but in that vein, because it kind of sounds like in that vein, it has like the kind of gore and violence of those movies, but it's really funny. Elijah Wood's great. He steals every scene he's in. Melly Linsky, who was in Heavenly Creatures, the Peter Jackson movie, How She Got Her Start. She's been in a lot of stuff. She's great in that movie, and she carries that entire film, I think. It's really funny, really great, and 90 minutes. So go watch it on Netflix. You can stream it now. Ben, what about you?
I know a lot of people think I'm in the bag for Netflix, like I'm swayed by personal ties. But I'm actually just going to say The Night Manager on Amazon. There's a lot of really great stuff on Amazon. I was surprised. When I left on my trip, you can download all this stuff for offline viewing, which is fantastic, right? So you go out on a trip. I watched all 6 hours of this thing on a plane, on my phone. I wish I'd seen it on a bigger screen, you know, but it was fantastic. So that would be my pick.
And that was originally through AMC.
AMC, but I think it was, I want to look at the production. I think it was co-produced with the BBC because it's mostly filmed in Europe. And it's just a slate of British actors. So I don't really think... I think AMC
it was.
Just... Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Production company BBC and AMC and a few other places.
It feels like Sherlock or one of those other prestige BBC productions where they're just blowing through money because they're out on the river. You know, they're in these mansions. They're in these speedboats. They've got helicopters. Like, it's this ridiculous display of wealth, but it fits the story.
Yeah, I'm looking at, like, they're in Switzerland. They're in Morocco. They're in Spain.
The locations are incredible. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I really was watching it just thinking about all the production aspects of it, and I'm like, how is this real? How is this really real? Like, No one should really fund this, because even though I'm watching it for free on Amazon, right? This is never going to make any money. This is the silliest thing in the world to have this like international thing scattered all over the earth with top tier actors all in it. They lost so much money on that. There's no way that that's... Anyway, that's the world we live in, Brandon.
They won Golden Globes. They won...
Well-deserved.
Emmys.
Yeah, I mean, well-deserved.
Yeah, they won... I mean, Hugh Lowry, Tom Hiddleston, and Olivia Colman all won Golden Globes for their performance in the movie, or in the miniseries. It was one of the big winners of Golden Globes.
Yeah, for good reason. Yeah. And it does feel like a movie. Yeah. Your mispronunciation is perfect.
Yeah.
Your Freudian slip.
Yes. But that's what TV is becoming kind of now. It's becoming these film cinematic-like stories.
Yeah.
But anyway, Ben, thank you for coming on. Guys, make sure you like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Cinenation Show. Feel free to tweet at us.
Or tell us why you listen.
Yeah, because we really need to know that. You can also go to iTunes, the Cinenation podcast, and subscribe. Also, give us a rating, give us a review. We want to hear from you guys. Make sure you follow us on Medium, because we have a lot of great stuff on there that we're doing. We're trying to get out at least one article or more a day. Like, it's been doing really well.
Yeah, really well. All of this is going really well, Brandon. I'm so surprised. It's so weird.
I'm still waiting for Ben to do his follow-up article from the one he wrote like a year ago, because that was the last one he wrote.
All right. The gauntlet has been thrown down.
I want to hear what you have to say, Ben. And our followers do, too.
I'm sure our millions of listeners agree with you, Brandon. All right.
Oh, man. Thank you, Ben.
Yep.
Guys, I hope you guys tune in to more episodes. Thank you guys for listening. Bye.